Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus podcast, where we bring together leaders and tech from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their expertise so that you can grow your business. My name is Gary Lafferty, your host and creator of the Growth Focus Partnerships, where we partner with tech leaders to help them grow away from the expert stage to the authority stage. So they're the ones that can be doing the choosing as opposed to the ones doing the chosen one. So without further ado, I can't wait for this episode's guest. Chris, why don't you start off by just introducing yourself and telling us who you are and what is it that you do?
Yeah, thanks, Gary. Getting over a cold here. But yeah, no, so my name is Chris Clark. I own and co-founded an agency originally based out of Los Angeles, but now it's moved to Austin, Texas, although we still have clients and people that work for us in LA. But our agency specializes in custom software development. And what I mean by that is we do, you know, iOS apps, Android apps, we do e-commerce websites, any kind of feature-rich applications is what we really specialize on. We do some branding and do some, you know, marketing, you know, kind of in the social media space, but really our bread and butter is the technology side of things and really creating those, like I said, feature-rich websites and apps that people really enjoy using.
Brilliant. We're going to dive a little bit into deeper into that as we get on with today. But just to dial it back a bit, tell us, how did you get started in this field?
Oh, gosh. I've been working in technology since about 1997. Originally, I was in like film and television production. I was a producer in the late 90s. And oddly enough, I worked for a production company in the Southeast, and they were, this is right when the website started coming out. And so they were like, oh, we need a website. So I was like, well, I can build that. So I just built him a website. And oddly enough, I don't know if you've heard of E! Entertainment out in LA. They had a television station, and they did a lot of, like, you know, really big shows at the time. Somehow, I don't know how, they saw that website, and then they brought me to LA for an interview. And then they wanted me to head up their web division, which they just started. And I was like, okay, that's cool. And so then I kind of shifted gears. I pivoted from being a producer to basically a web designer. And that's kind of how it all started. And I did that and worked for a lot of different agencies in Los Angeles. The first big one that I worked for is EMA. They're around for a long time. Pretty much work with every studio that you can name off of the list. And we did a lot of entertainment design stuff for them. We did like their websites. We did DVDs and Blu-rays, which were really popular at that time. Interactive, you know, CD-ROMs at the time. I mean, you're talking about some dating stuff. I mean, how old is this guy? You know, so, but yeah, so I did that. And then I ran my own agency named Brain Soup for a better part of 10 years in Los Angeles. And we had offices in Hollywood. We had an office in Pasadena. And from there, we just started kind of really following all the technology trends because the studios really demanded it. They were like, we have to be the first to do this. We have to be the first to do that. We have to one up all of our competition. And whether that was creating the next interactive, creating the next like game that was on like a DVD or Blu-ray or even on a website, you know, really trying to up that ante for the clients, you know, and really kind of having to really stay on the razor edge of technology for a long time. And as you know, like web and apps, they outdate themselves pretty much every 6 to 8 months. And then there's something new out there. So you have to really be on top of it. But I did that and then did some consulting for a little bit after I sold off the agency, and which it ran for another like 5 years, I think. And then but then I basically was doing consulting for Fortune 500 companies in the tech areas and their web stuff, and really kind of refined my skills a little bit, and then came back around and we found Badpixel in 2020.
That is very much of a, you know, really powerful background to where you are today. Now, you did mention, you know, you've bought and sold agencies before. What is the biggest lesson, Chris, that you've brought to building this one that you got today?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. There's so much knowledge and so much things that you learn over time, you know, especially coming from my roots of owning and operating agencies. I think the biggest thing that I could, like, if I could point to one thing that I think that is really operational refinement. You have to really know what you're doing on every level. And as a CEO, I have a partner who's the president, so we're on equal grounds, even though technically she owns 1% more than me. But some people will get that joke, some people won't. So basically it's operational awareness. Understanding how an agency works is a little bit different than how some other service-based industries work. And they also, tech companies work. So you could have worked at like a startup, like a SaaS company, like where you're providing a software as a service to like your customer base. Well, that operationally functions similarly to an agency, but not really, because your customer base is different. You know, it's, you're looking at a client, a B2B model, as opposed to a B2C model. And the things that we do internally have to be really tight, from project management to creating proposals, to making sure we're scoping out the correct work, and making sure the requirements are gathered from a person that's not in the same building with you. That's another thing that's different. You know, you have to, you know, pull people out of meetings in, you know, in an agency world and get them to talk about, okay, what is the problem we're trying to solve? What is it that we're trying to do for your software and for your, you know, your experience? And if your operations internally are not really buttoned down, it's a nightmare. And a lot of people that I think start agencies and even freelancers go through this, because that's kind of the evolution of an agency, is kind of, you know, starting out as one and then growing into many. And you have to grow that operational process. I can tell you right now, Bad Pixel would not be as successful as it is today had we not had those failures back, you know, when I had Brain Soup, you know, and things like that. And also, even when I was a consultant for the Fortune 500 industry, our companies, you know, you learn from that a lot. I think the company I worked for right before Bad Pixel was a company called MedMen, and they were in Los Angeles. They were based in Los Angeles, but they were a national cannabis company. And I built their product design team. And I can tell you right now, they're even to this day, there's just stuff you learn and you go, wow, you know, we should do this better because this is not working. And, you know, they always say fail fast, because, and a lot of people go, why would you want to fail? It's like, well, if you fail, you identify a problem and then you can solve it. And you want to do that quickly so you can keep moving. But I think, you know, that's a long-winded answer, but it's I think when you ask that, that's exactly what pops in my head. Is we couldn't run Bad Pixel and, you know, and manage 35 plus people and, you know, 10 plus clients without having that operational, you know, awareness and those processes in place. So that's key.
Well, that's a really interesting point you said there, Chris, about failing fast. And you're absolutely right. You know, half the people will totally understand what we mean by fail fast, get back up and go. The other half will be going, well, why would you want to fail? Failure means you're a failure. And I think at the end of the day, just because you failed in that endeavor doesn't make you the failure, doesn't make you any less of the entrepreneur. When it comes to failing and failing fast, what do you think are the key mindset shifts that you have to have? Because obviously, when you fail, it's going to hit you a little. It's going to hit you in various degrees. What mindset shifts did you have to go through that you could share with people here that says, actually, failing and failing fast is a good thing, and this is how you get on with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good, it's a good point to make. And I think as you come up through your career, especially with me, I think one of the things that I had to do is exactly what you were just saying. It's like, don't take it personally. You know, the failure in and of itself is not a reflection of a lack of attention to detail or a lack of effort or, you know, any kind of like passion that you have for what you do and what you're creating. And I think one of the things that we can do is just say to our team, we're all going to fail. And that's just part of this industry. And it's part of learning. It's how you deal with that failure that makes you successful. And that's what I would tell anybody. It's like, use those opportunities and go, wow, you know, we did all of these thought processes. We did all of this planning. We did all of this stuff to create this version of this software. And then this one piece is not working like what you thought it would. And it's like, okay, well, that's great. That's a problem to solve. We as creators, whether you're a designer or a developer or a project manager or a product manager, we're all there in it together. And one of the things that I think is really key is when you identify that, we're all problem solvers. And that's where it gets fun. That's where my passion comes from. It's like, okay, there's a new problem to solve. Let's jump on that and let's solve that. Let's make it even better than the initial concept. Because you know this, but software development is really never ever complete. If anybody tells you it's one and done, they don't know what they're talking about. Software, websites, OS apps, any kind of like desktop software, they iterate on it. That's why, if everybody out there that's watching, that's why you get new Apple software every year. That's why you get new Microsoft updates every, you know, 6 months or wherever. Microsoft is probably every other day, but, you know, I jest, but it's true. It's like, that's why there is a new something. There's a new something to, you know, play with, to tap on. It's because they're iterating on a roadmap. So software starts here, but it can go forever. It just depends on how long the company is going to support that initiative. And so that's really kind of that. But sorry, I digressed a little bit, but that's kind of, you know, for the failure piece, that's key. Let's go get excited about the new challenge.
Yeah, and I love the way you put that. Get excited about the new challenge because, yeah, I was talking to a client of mine earlier today, and what we were talking about is, you know, like you just said there, software isn't just about iterating and becoming something new. It's also this constant need to break it and see what breaks and then improve upon it. You know, it's not, rather than waiting for it to break, because once you're waiting for it to break, it's too late. It's this constant iteration of wait or pushing it to its very limit and then going, here's an update, so this doesn't actually happen. It's the new beginnings over and over again. And like you said, it's not personal. If you fail, you fail fast, you get back up again, and just treat yourself like a piece of software. Love that bit. So listen, so you're in a very competitive space, you know, when, and I know we all think that we're all, what we do is very individual, and it is, but to the rest of the world out there, to new clients, to prospects out there, there is a danger of all sounding the same of what we do when it comes to deliverables and whatnot. So as you're in a competitive space, how are you standing out in a way that still works today?
That is an awesome, awesome question. I'm glad you asked me that, because that is something that any agency owner, I think, struggles with on a daily or weekly basis. What we did at Bad Pixel was, it's the way we approached the project, I think, that makes us a little bit more unique. Now, I'm sure there are agencies out there that do very similar approaches. I mean, because like there is only so many ways that you can paint a canvas. You know, there's only so many ways that you can do it, but there are creative ways that people haven't thought of yet. So our secret sauce, and there are some pitfalls in there that we can talk about later, but one of the things that we kind of identified early on, and this was in like 2020, we started to pitch like really large clients. We went from, and all of our business is based on referrals. You know, that's how we started. You know, I have a network of people that I talk to all the time that I've worked with. And one of the things that I noticed was, anybody can go to an agency and say, I want a website and it needs to do this, 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 and this. Okay. I want an app and it can do this, this, and this, and this. And you go, okay. So what we do is we go, okay, they gave us their requirements. They said, this is the website we want and this is the requirements. We say, well, what if you did something else? What if you did this, 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 and this? And then we show them like a feature that they haven't even thought about. And we actually visualize it for them. And the proposal will actually show them what it could look like. And it's just a way of doing a mock-up of like maybe what the new site would look like or the new app would look like. And then what we do is we do market research, not just in their industry, but in other industries that might have technology or features that they never considered, because they're like, we're an apparel brand. So why would we ever want to do this feature? Because that doesn't line up. And I'm like, well, it does line up, and here's how. And then we show them that thing. And an example of that would be, we had a client that is their Patagonia competitor, you know, outdoors wear, you know, active wear. And I was like, wouldn't it be cool if on your website people could go and buy something, but then there was notifications of like hiking events, camping events, social events around their location, and it geolocates them either off the browser IP. Or if you turn on locations, it's fine. If you enable that, or off the app, if you're on your phone. So if you're like camping in Colorado and you've got your phone with you and you have the app on, like you were like, oh, you know, I need me some new boots or something. And then it's like, hey, did you know there's a camping event like 2 miles away from you? And so when you talk about stuff like that, then their eyes light up and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe that. You know, we never even thought of that. And it's like, yeah, you know, and, you know, we had another client that was, you know, also in apparel, and they were a wedding, you know, dress producer. And we said, wouldn't it be cool if you could manage your entire wedding party through your website? And then basically you can invite all the people, you can buy all their dresses, you can get the sizes, you can have a social running chat about things, you know, where they talk about things, all kinds of stuff like that. And so that was our secret sauce. And kind of going to them and saying, we're not just an agency that's going to build you something, like, you know, most of them are. They're just like, yeah, I can do that. We're actually going to care about what your roadmap is going to be and how are you going to be a differentiator in your industry. And that's what we really started with.
So my question would be this, your road mapping that you do, and I think it's a great thing, you know, you're almost future pacing for them, what it could be and whatnot. Is that more based upon client success, or is it a subtle form of marketing? Is it something else? How do you see it? Well, how did you come up with it? And then how do you actually see it?
Also, another amazing question, because one of the things that a lot of people that I've noticed don't do, even clients. We have clients that, you know, multi-million-dollar clients that basically don't know what a roadmap is. They're just like, we need a website or we need an app, or, you know, they don't think about the future. And so the way we put that together is you have to look at it in a layer effect. When I explain this to the clients that we're going to do this, one of the things that I tell them is like, because obviously you can tell I'm a Star Wars fan. One of the things that I said, have you ever seen, you know, I think it's called D3. It's where Disney comes out and they show you all of the TV shows that they're going to produce for a season. And then there's a long timeline. And then there's like all the shows dropping. And I'm like, imagine those shows as versions of your app or your site. So think of it like that. Think of a timeline. And then what we do is we say, okay, what is the MVP, the most viable product or project? Some people say valuable, some viable, whatever, however you want to say it. But what is the base level of features that you need to be successful today? And so we create that requirements list and that scope of work. And then we look at that based on the learning we've done for competitive analysis and market research, because those are going to inform all those requirements. And if you don't do those two things together, you're just going to, well, you're going to set up for failure. So, and not the good failure we talked about, the bad failure, because then the client's going to be like, well, why aren't we making money? And that's when you go, I don't really do my market research, you know? So it's like, okay. So we start with that. And then we say, okay, well, basically we start with a giant feature list based on all that research and what the problems are that the company's trying to solve and what they're trying to achieve. You know, what are those, you know, KPIs that we need to meet, and the return on their investment? You know, that's another piece that we could throw in there. And so what we do is we say, okay, this is, if we had the dream website, it would do all of this stuff, or the dream app, it would do all of this stuff. And then we start going, okay, there's no way we can do that in 3 months or 6 months. The timeline now interferes and says, okay. And sometimes budget does, well, most of the time budget does too. They'll be like, oh, we can't spend that amount of money right now, but we can over time. And so then we start looking at how we space out and say, okay, well, this feature is nice, but it's not mission critical. So let's push that to phase three. This one's not critical. So let's push that to phase two, but it's a fast follow that we want to have because we really like it. So that's how those roadmaps start like turning out. And it's worth mentioning that a roadmap is a living timeline. It's a living document. And so you could get to phase two, and because of phase one's learnings, because you're going to have learning during every phase that you're working on. Oh my gosh, like we just had a client that we went through this with. It was awesome. But you learn certain things and you pivot on phase one. So we pivoted on phase one for some of the feature sets because the client's like, well, what if we did this and what if we did that? And if you have a creative client, that's great, as long as they got a budget. Because, you know, who wants to work for free? You know, and then so basically, then you get to phase two, and now you have to retroactively look at what you did in phase one that wasn't part of the original planning and say, okay, now we got to bring phase one or phase two up to where that is, marry those two, and then from there, you create a new phase two scope of work and requirements. And then that happens, you know, over time. You know, it's basically called project grooming, where you get everybody in a room and you get your designers, your developers, your project managers, whoever, however you have your setup going, and then you go through everything that you learned. It's called retrospective. You go through everything you learned in phase one. And then once you go through that, and this is probably one of the most critical things that people need to do in a creative agency, is they go through what worked, what didn't work, what you would like to see improved upon, you know, and any kind of really brutally honest feedback. Were there communication breakdowns, you know, from team member to team member, or from, you know, vertical to vertical? And you got to go through all of that. And then that helps inform the next part of the roadmap, because you need, it's not just about improving the software. It's about improving your team's effort. And if you've got people, your lead software developers and your lead designers, and they're not leading or they're not communicating down, or even if I'm not communicating correctly, if the product team's not communicating correctly, you know, you can do the most beautiful work in the world, but you're going to start losing really quality people because that roadmap process is not being followed correctly. And it's not being utilized to where it values not just the company and the client, it values the people that work within that system. And so that's really key. I think you gotta start with the people that you work with. It's not just about the numbers up here. It's gotta be about where it starts, you know?
That's a really, really good point. And there's not enough people that talk about for the people. In fact, in the last 24 hours, I've only had two people, including one is you, talk about the importance of your team, your people. You know, your clients are important, but it's also your people that's important as well. So that's really, really interesting. I want to talk about sales, because we talked a little bit about the pipeline and what's happened and sales. You've told me before, when we've spoken before, that you're not the traditional sales guy, you know, but you also understand we all have to do a degree of founder-led sales. So what's worked for you when it comes to founder-led sales or founder-led visibility?
You know, that's interesting, because we're kind of like coming out of Christmas and going in the holidays, whatever, you know, respectfully people worship and celebrate. I think one of the things that we started seeing is we needed to kind of, because we had just finished up a bunch of projects and the clients that we work for were saying, okay, well, we got to get our budgets in order for Q1. So we're not going to kick off anything new until Q2. So we had this kind of gap from some of our fairly large clients. And we're like, well, we could backfill some of that. Let's see if we can go out and pull in some work. You know, that way we have something to kind of, because the last thing, another thing you don't want to do as an agency is have really talented people on your team, which we do have, and them going, got any work for me? You know, it's like, not yet. So that's another thing to consider is that work needs to be flowing in, like we're talking about sales. So for us, when we started, I mentioned that I had been doing a lot of consulting. I've been working in the industry for a long time. And this is like the 2009 timeline, 2010, 2011, around there, you know, right after the economy jump started back again. And so I made a lot of connections in different places. Went through my list of contacts and said, hey, everybody, you know, I've gone back and started another agency. You know, Brain Soup is out of business, but Bad Pixel is new, you know, and I stick with all these B names, but it works. And so I'm like, do you guys need any help from us, you know, creatively? Oddly enough, and you would not think this would be possible, but oddly enough, during COVID, we exploded because, I think I likened it to one or two different variables. One of them was because COVID was happening and people were shutting down, like they're going to like basically a very lean model to run their business. Design teams, development teams, maybe got trimmed down like 80%. So they only had people to maintain what they had currently built, but they didn't have anybody to build more. They didn't have a team anymore. They all got laid off or furloughed or whatever it was. And so when I knocked on their door and said, hey, we have a whole team here. We can build or design or develop whatever you want. Then the lights turned on. Everything was just booming. And so that was kind of luck, to be honest with you. I mean, I just threw a dart at the wall and see if I hit something. And I was like, it can't hurt to ask. Why not? But then we got into like this. We tried to do like, you've heard of ZoomInfo, the email marketing platform. I'm going to be very political about this. I felt like it wasn't effective for us. And that's probably a us problem because that's not our forte. I can write the best emails in the world. I can write, you know, I can write copy. I'm creative. So it's not hard for me to write you a nice email that you're going, oh, this is interesting. Let me check this out. The problem is oversaturation of the market. So you get like all these agencies and all these companies. And I mean, I can tell you right now, I'm sure you do as well. I get 1,000 emails a day from other people wanting to sell me something. And it's all through some kind of email marketing platform. You know, I don't want to just pick on ZoomInfo, but you know, the thing is that I didn't find it effective. Thousands of emails sent, we netted one client. So The ratio there, the ROI was not there for us. We were just like, this is way too expensive and it's not returning that. So other avenues that we've been exploring, which is great, is obviously, you know, I think being kind of up, we're going to be opening up our blog section of our website where we're going to have articles that myself, my other co-founder has written. Some of our designers have written, our developers have written. We want to make sure everybody has a voice here. And as long as it's not offensive, I don't mind them posting. Also, you know, podcasts like yours, I think is very effective in getting like who you are out there. I think people want to see a human face to a digital experience. You know, sometimes when they're like, well, I don't know what a bad pixel is. And I don't know, you know, what that, you know, I don't know what it is, you know? And so maybe they want to see the face behind the brand, you know, or one of the faces because I have a co-founder. But so those are some avenues that we are exploring. Also, you know, all of our clients, we always ask them, hey, can you refer business to us if you really enjoyed our experience with us? And this really getting out there and kind of being a little bit, you know, loud about everything, like what we've done, but not in a way that's obnoxious. You know, we don't want to be out there just banging the drum to bang a drum. You know, it's like, okay, do you have something to say? Then yeah, we'll go out there. But that's really kind of where we've kind of landed. Also, my partner and I, we're the members of the Austin Chamber of Commerce. So we go to all the Chamber of Commerce meetings, you know, where you get to schmooze with all the people locally. Fortunately, fortunately and unfortunately, Austin is a home to a lot of agencies. I'm like, hey, I own an agency. And they're like, so do I. You know, you're handing your business cards to them. And it's like, but we made a lot of great connections and great friends here through that and a lot of great experiences. So And another agency owner who I'm really good friends with, his name's Brady Patterson. One of the things he was always saying is go to these meetups, like where you're, you know, like the technology meetups and design meetups, and just go to those and just socialize. And that's another way you can do it. And I think it's something that a lot of people just don't think about. But that human interaction, I think, is really key.
Yeah, absolutely. I think today, in a world where we've automated almost everything, what we're seeing more and more and more over the course of the last 6 months, maybe even 9 months, is that people want to have that relationship back again. They want to shake the hand. They want to look you in the eye. They, as you say, they want to put the face in front of the digital face. And that's becoming more and more important in order to stand out, because a lot of people are, I mean, hiding is probably one of the words, but, you know, for sake of another word, they are hiding behind an email. And it's really when you're getting bombarded with emails, then you're just not being seen. You're not being seen. You're not being heard. You're just in the trash can with everybody else, right? And that's the key thing. So that being said, I've got this loaded question as your last question. If you could go back and give, with all your experience, Chris, that you've had through all of the agencies and the businesses and the consultancies that we've done, if you could give young Chris a word of advice on being successful, what would that word be?
Oh my God. One word or just
no,
like,
no. It's just, what would it be to, if you had to give young Chris some advice?
Wow. Missed opportunities. Don't miss them. In other words, I think, you know, cause I am, you know, I'm 50 years old. So I'm, you know, in my midlife and all the experience I've had up to now, you have that ability and that wisdom to look backwards and say, I should have done this. I should have done that. I should have done this. But they were so obviously there and glaring that I would tell myself, I'd say, always look at it from a different perspective. Like, look at these opportunities from a different perspective. One of the biggest ones would be growth. You know, like, growing BrainSoup was painful. It took forever. We started out with 15 people, I think. No, we started out with 3 people and grew it to 15. And then from there, it went all the way up to almost like 40, 50. And so I think what I would tell myself is, you could have easily accomplished that if you had done a certain amount of, like, when you get the wins in a project, when you go, okay, you know the client's happy and they're like, God, this is great. That's when you pounce and you say, okay, you know, not in a bad way, in a good way. Well, if you love that, we can do this, this, and this. And I always have options for your clients and say, well, we could do this and this. Now, this is going to be a little bit more expensive and this is going to be a little bit more time, but look at what we could possibly achieve and what the ROI on that would be. Look what you could gain in momentum and in viewership and gain in, you know, adaptation or adoption or, you know, rates and things like that. I think it's one of those things that I would say that probably was my weakest quality as a young Chris, because, you know, I know it probably doesn't seem like it here, and wisdom and age being the factor here. Like, when I was 21, 22, 23, all the way up into my mid-20s, I wasn't as confident as I am now. And that's shocking. I mean, maybe I was in a social setting, but not in a business setting. So I think a lot of people, and I'm guilty of this too, even to this day, you know, because some of our clients are kind of semi-famous or famous. And so I get into a call with them and you get a little bit of nerves. You know, it's like, okay, well, yeah, this person's accomplished a lot and I've accomplished a lot, but it makes you nervous. And I think that another thing I would tell myself is, don't be nervous. Everybody's human. They're not going to jump to the screen and bite you, or, you know, and don't worry about, like, you're not trying to win their affection. You're trying to win their business. And you, by having that confidence and having those, you know, your homework done, making sure you know what you're talking about, making sure that when you are upselling from a success point, that, yeah, it's a no brainer for them. They go, okay, yeah, that sounds great. And I have adopted that as I've gotten older, and it works. It works perfectly. I mean, as soon as you have a win, you want to give them another win. Say, okay, we did this. This is great. Let me get another win for you, which is a win for us as well. So, you know, you're not trying to manipulate anybody. You're just trying to keep that success train going. You know, you want to keep that roadmap going. And so that's the thing that I think for me as a young Chris was, have good confidence, understand your industry, do daily research. You want to be on all kinds of websites, reading about, you know, whatever the rags are that you're reading, you know, whether it's Smashing Magazine or some kind of, if you're a designer or UI UX designer, or if it's some another, you know, any other kind of, I would say, credible source that talks about your industry. And also, I would say, ancillary industries as well. So if you're a designer, read about the, you know, product design world with UI and UX and digital, you know, designs. And then you can also read about the development of those designs, because you want to be able to understand those things. So I would say, do your research. Make sure you understand your industry. Make sure that you can answer questions. Make sure you have the confidence that you feel when, you know, as a professional. And I think that if you do those first three things, the fourth one will be, it's a no-brainer because you know it. It comes into your mind. Then you're like, and if they start asking you questions in a meeting, you can answer them. And if you don't be afraid to say, I don't know. Let me go check on that. Let me go find out. Or let me go ask my developers or let me go ask my designers. Don't be afraid to not know, but also come prepared. So, and I think that as a young Chris, that was something, you know, coming out of college, going into like the professional industry immediately, and especially in a market like Los Angeles, it's intimidating. It really is. But it makes you grow up fast. So yeah, but that's really what I would say.
That's a brilliant place to end this interview on. It's been a great piece of advice there. So if people want to get hold of you, potentially work for you, or you know, what's the best way of doing that?
I would just say go through our website, madpixel.com. There's a schedule a meeting, and it basically will put a meeting on my calendar. We had it going to somebody else's, but you know, he decided he wanted to go do something else. It was great for him, great having him. But now it comes directly to me until we fulfill that role in another way. But if you want to get to know me or have a project to talk about, or also I'm open to things like this, like podcasts like this as well. I think it's important for us to keep the conversation going and keep evolving as agencies, as creative professionals and developers and things like that. So I'm open to both. As long as it's not you trying to sell me insurance, I'll be happy.
Yeah. Well, I'll make sure that your links are in the show notes so people can just do a one click and get straight through you. Well, Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for your time and your insights today.
Thank you so much, Gary. It's been a pleasure, and I'm happy to come back anytime. I love talking. You can tell I like to talk, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, let's make that a part two. We'll get you back for a part two. So thank you very much. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for yet another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast. And as usual, if you've taken one piece of insight, one piece of nugget from Chris today, please make sure you like it. Please make sure you comment so other people can see what you've learned from that. And perhaps it helps them. But more importantly, please share. Hit that share button so that other people can learn and can grow as well. So until next time, keep striving, keep working hard, but more importantly, please be profitable. We'll see you on the next episode. Bye-bye.